Hello and welcome to Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, it's a real pleasure for me to join my fellow 104.1 talk show host here broadcasting live on location at the Southern Arizona Horse Expo at the University of Arizona Equine Center in Tucson today, and that's at Campbell and Rogers for our local listeners. For these next 2 hours, my commitment, as always, is going to be to talk positively about change, personal and organizational. We plan to equip you with pragmatic advice and even some unconventional wisdom for you to be more of who you are and what you stand for, not less. So this show isn't about running in circles, but helping you circle back and learn, reflect, and maybe pull your lifetime of relationships and experiences together in new ways to set out on a new trajectory. So today I'm going to be featuring four very prominent individuals, three of whom have contributed to earlier Circles of Change shows. Alan Martin, a renowned artist of contemporary Southwestern art, is debuting his painting, The Celebration of the Horse, today here at the Expo. His first career, as I call it, was illustrations, and they have been on the cover of Time Magazine, Sports Illustrated, and within a long list of magazines and books. Alan actually reinvented himself as a narrative artist and historian following but maybe a six-week retirement at most over 20 years ago. My second famous artist and guest is going to be, and he's actually, frankly, a true Renaissance man. He's going to join us next, and that's Bill Mumy, who's a noted quarter horse rancher, as in bringing the lineage of Coy's Bonanza into the United States quarter horse history. He's also recognized as a Southwestern artist, both painter and sculptor. He's an Olympic athlete, industrial designer, author, and movie entrepreneur. In fact, Bill and I are going to talk about the history of a horse as portrayed in a film he wrote, directed, produced, and filmed some 30 years ago. It was narrated by actor Lauren Green of television Bonanza fame. That film is called On the Fifth Day. Next, then, is going to be talented writer Michael Blake, best known for his screenplay, the movie Dances with Wolves, and several books capturing his lifelong passion for horses and reverence for wild animals, in particular the wild Mustang horses, of which Michael will be presenting at the Expo later today and tomorrow here in Center Stage, so come on down. We spoke during the first show about his book 12, The King, during our 100th Circle of Change show in 2008, and today I'm delighted to feature his newest book, Into the Stars. It's a fictional story about a World War I soldier who falls behind enemy lines and connects with a horse, no kidding, and it's illustrated by yet another well-known painter, John Sully. And do stick around then for our final half an hour segment and meet Dr. Jim Hill of J.B. Hill Cowboy Boots in El Paso, Texas. A career veterinarian and lifelong advocate of the horse, Jim and a partner of his, actually quite on intuition, invested $17,500 for a young racehorse in the early 1970s. And yes, none other that became the famous Triple Crown winner, Seattle Slew. Dr. Hill is going to share with us some multiple circles in his career, now as an entrepreneur in the high-end wearable art cowboy boot business. But you know, he's about to circle back again and invest in racehorses. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a firm I lead. We're a change leadership consulting, executive, and career coaching firm, helping change the status quo, not merely just find jobs or fixing broken organizations. So do visit my site, thelarsongroup.com, that's Larson with an E, to survey services and tap the free library of now 160 radio show podcasts. You can find the podcast, in fact, for today's show. It'll be up by this Wednesday, January 20th. So steal the information shamelessly to help your own journey as well as to help others with theirs. So stay tuned. We'll be right back here on Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it, here on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson News Talk FM. Circles of Change here on a beautiful Saturday at the Equine Center at the University of Arizona. Do come on over this part of town, folks, and see an amazing collection of professionals related to the equestrian world. And I think we might point out this expo isn't just for one type of horse bias, but rather covering Western, Eastern, English, all the holistic things and attributes to support our greater horse community. So with that, let me launch into our show and welcome on the show Alan Martin, artist and extraordinary human being that I have the pleasure of knowing. Welcome again, Alan.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, I've got in front of me a copy of the print version, and you can actually come down here to the show and see the actual rendition that Alan has done. It's called The Celebration of the Horse. So that's what we're going to talk about this morning. But before we do, let me give a brief introduction. For those of you who may not be familiar with his work, Alan is actually a native of Canada. He grew up near Niagara Falls on a farm. He went to the Ontario College of Art in Toronto, and he later studied at the Slade School of Art at the University of London. Hard work and persistence paid off, and he segued his career from television into the media, the print version, through illustration for 25 years as a high-powered illustrator in New York City. And his work has been featured on the cover of Time, within Sports Illustrated, and several wonderful children's books. And it was a decision to retire, actually, or so he thought, that brought him to Tucson. Although, as the story goes, that lasted about, what, 6 weeks, Alan?
6 weeks.
And then you knew it, you had to want it, and you wanted to reinvent yourself.
I had to.
You had to.
Yes, I did.
That's right.
It was very, I had enough of trimming mesquites and raking the desert, and I knew I would fall asleep in a minute.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, share with us the evolution, then, of the type of painting you decided to approach, Alan. You call it narrative, as well as based on the ledger drawings of the Native American.
Well, it's I have been interested in narrative paintings and things like tapestries my whole life, and that and wall paintings, for instance, Egyptian wall paintings. And then when I came out here, I found that there was a thing called ledger art, and there was the American Indian. Back east, you know, we're kind of shielded from it. It's not in your face like it is here. And I found a whole new thing that I wanted to look at and work at. And as I knew that I wasn't going to be able to retire very easily, I thought, why don't you start painting? You always wanted to. And so I sat myself down and figured out how I would put it together. And it came out looking like this.
Yes, and for those to get a visual sense, for those of you who might be near a computer, you can go to Alan Mardon, AllanMardon.com, and take a view at his work. Of course, one of several of the pieces Tucsonans will recognize. You've painted San Javier, the mission. Your big piece that's, of course, at the Whitney Museum in Cody on the Battle of Greasy Grass. I think one thing we might mention is you're also a historian in that regard.
Yes, much to my surprise. One of the things that got me painting these narrative paintings is that I wanted to make sure that I was going to embark on something that kept my interest.
Yes.
I don't think I could paint the same thing over and over again without some kind of story behind it. And I'm not really a storyteller, but I do love history. And I found that I would have a vast reserve of things to do if I just paid attention to history and did something about it on canvas.
Fantastic. And the Battle of Greasy Grass, of course, you spent, what, over a year just doing the research portion of it.
That's right. And then a year painting it.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Well, we're here today, of course, certainly to address the painting I have in front of us here, the Celebration of the Horse. So there was some research and some storyline and some inspiration behind that. Where were you at the time you got the thought about doing this?
Well, I think you and Ted had something to do with that.
I think so. We planted the seeds.
Yeah. And all of a sudden I found myself in this horse society all of a sudden. And I've been painting horses for a long time and not paying too much attention to what their background was. And so Now I wanted to paint horses that looked like what I thought they were, and I know they are. There are these large, massive animals that are brave and all kinds of things like that. And so I painted that part of the horse instead of painting what it actually looked like.
Yes,
anatomically.
Exactly, and I think for those of you who have a chance to see his work or come and visit us here at the Southern Arizona Horse Expo, you'll come to appreciate it's the symbology that jumps out and grabs people who understand the horse.
Yep, and you know, years and years ago when I was back in school and I was studying art, and they sent me to museums to look at pots, and I remember looking at these pots with these Etruscan horses on it, they impressed me because they showed what the horse was made of rather than what he looked like and the spirit of the horse. So that's kind of where it came from. These horses I draw now aren't like Etruscan horses, But that's the root of what I did.
Well, the storyline in your actual painting that's in front of us then, of course, is going to tap on the history of the horse, and I see the figure prominently displayed on an orange horse.
Yep. You know, I paint horses all kinds of colors. I got that from researching and on the ledger art, where the American Indian would draw a horse with whatever kind of pencil he had at the time. And so I just sort of took that, and I've been doing it ever since. I paint horses all kinds of colors to give it some kind of excitement, and to me it makes the painting much more vibrant, and so there we are. And you know, the funny thing is, nobody's ever asked me why I paint horses all these different kind of colors, so it must work.
It must work, exactly. Yeah. It fits in. Well, the painting, folks, displays a magnificent white horse, and in the foreground then there is Cortez.
Yes.
On his stallion, which of course symbolizes the bringing of the horse back to North America. And then along in the clouds that are fluffing around, you've selected a number of historic names or places to mention.
Well, this was a bit of an education to me, because I really didn't really know this kind of thing about the horse. But in there you'll find the name of Cortez's horse. By the way, his was black, and he's there. He is in I can't read that number in here, but anyway. And then there's Michael Blake's horse, the king.
That's right.
Yep. And then all of these other things that are in here are referring to what the horse has been in history, and who, and this Sunka Wakan is the Indian for dog god, I think.
Dog god, yes.
Yeah, which the horse replaced the dog as a carrier.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the other side, of course, of the ethereal, Alan's work always inspires a thought about the stars and the moon and the sun and circles. And so you've got Pegasus up in the right-hand corner.
Yes, I do. Couldn't help it.
Couldn't help it.
No.
And so the tie-in also to the mythical and the mysterious part, and that part of history for people who appreciate the equestrian world.
Yeah. Well, to me, the mythical is wrapped up in almost everything we do. And I can't separate it anymore. It's just has been a way. It just has developed that way as I've been painting.
That's right. Well, this new painting, Alan, actually marks kind of a transition point for you also in your career. You're venturing out now. We saw this morning number one hit on Google, and one section was actually a press release related to your painting. And then also the marketing now of the memorabilia you've had in hand for years and collected.
Yes.
And then also, I know, happy birthday. A couple months ago, you turned 79, so you had an interesting phase of your life in that regard, too.
Yes, yes. And this has been a great time in my life for me, as I can now at last I can just sort of sit and paint and concentrate on what it is I'm doing. I don't have to, thanks to Ted, get out there and market myself like I used to do. So life is a lot simpler now than it used to be.
In fact, I mentioned to our listeners, Ted, of course, refers to my husband and my partner in life. But Alan and I and Ted met courtesy of one of his earlier paintings, which is just a beautiful promise of the future that we purchased. But then he came on my radio show, and then we started talking. And I share this thought with our listeners, is you never know where your next circle and opportunity to collaborate with someone would come from. Because here we are not even knowing one another a year, and in front of us is a fabulous painting. It's being part of this horse expo that I certainly wouldn't have envisioned, that keeps us kind of opening our mind to possibility, doesn't it?
It does. And they're always there. And it's a miracle how all that happens. I'm not a religious person, but I am a spiritual one, and becoming more so as the days go by. Because somehow or other, these things happen, and there's no real explanation for it, so I guess I have to turn to the word faith and understand that there's something going on that I don't understand, and I don't need to. all I know is it happens.
It happens. Yeah. You know, when part of Alan's transition here, since we do know one another so well, is he also made the decision to move from a larger property to downsizing.
Yes,
and
I
in the process of downsizing, opening all these boxes and folders and filing cabinets and kind of becoming reacquainted with some of your earlier work.
Yes, and as you're telling me that, I remember opening up a box that I hadn't opened up for a very long time, and it had some work in it that I had done years and years ago for a commercial project in Canada for Esso Oil, and it was a set of map covers that strangely looked like the paintings I do today, and that's 40 or better years ago, maybe 50 years ago. So.
And you don't know when these kind of things are going to circle back and inspire you again, or keep you on it, or take you back on that path.
That's right. It also told me again that, you know, you're wired in a certain way, and something's there, and you need to find it and pay attention to it, and which, not by any path that I was really aware of, I seem to have found, and just by accident or whatever. But I was grateful that it was pointed out to me in so many ways, and I paid enough attention to understand it.
Well, I think, you know, the concept of the horse, you know, you grew up on a farm, so you've been around animals most of your life.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you the question here on your portrayal of this magnificent white horse is a red heart right in his lower chest. Talk to us about that.
Well, that's, of course, where the horse's heart is. And I always try to put it in a lot. In lots of paintings, like the buffalo, because the American Indian did, and when they were doing their ledger paintings, and you know, I don't invent very many things, but I see a lot of things, and I use them to the best of my advantage, and it is the essence, the heart is the essence of that animal, and us, and everybody else, so I can't help but sometimes just put it there to remind you what that means.
Well, in fact, I touched that back to, of course, Clay Harper, who hosts and pulled this great event together, because Clay's mantra is to hold your heart in your hand.
Yeah.
And that really rings true, doesn't
it? That is true. That is exactly true.
Well, we've got a celebration of the horse, and folks who are interested can view it on alanmardin.com. You can also go to Hat Creek Tea. That's HATCREEKT.com. And, of course, you can come over to this side of town and come and see the real deal. But we'll certainly have it out and more visible in future venue. Where are you going to go from here, Alan? What's next, or what else you got on the docket right now?
Well, I've got a couple of big paintings I'm wanting to do. And one has to do with more of the American Indian narrative. It has to do with Wounded Knee.
Mm-hmm.
And I am looking forward to spending a couple of years doing just that. And it'll take a long time for me to, as it did with the Custer painting, to do some research, get some real understanding. I mean, I know the story, the one you read, but I'd like to know more. And I think it's just an important painting to do, just so that maybe people can somehow understand what happened and who was responsible for what, and we'll see.
And how that knowledge can translate into our understanding, perhaps, of some of the shifts going on today and
could
the changes we want to see happen further in a positive way.
That's right. And if you pay attention, you know, history just keeps repeating itself like a broken record, and it would be nice to remember what happened in history, so it might give you a clue as to what might be happening in the future.
Yeah, that's right. Kind of an interesting question I got for you. What's your favorite color?
Blue.
And why's that?
My eyes are blue.
Okay,
I guess I don't know.
One.
I see blue. I don't know. It always has been blue.
Because that's one thing, is those familiar with work and those who want to learn more about Alan Mardin, you'll come to understand, is the vibrancy of the color. I've seen it firsthand, of course, having had the pleasure of seeing the Battle of Greasy Grass, or as the white man calls it, the Battle of Little Bighorn Horn up in Cody, Wyoming, that children are attracted to your work. And so this affinity with youth, I think.
Well, I think it's the style of the art, for one thing, and the fact that it's a narrative is another thing. I mean, it's a story. You can actually see it, and you can follow it. And one of the things I strive I've striven to do from the very outset is to make it available to whoever is watching. And you know, everybody looks at a painting and they see it from their perspective and from their background and how they view things. And it's I've been blessed with being able to put something down that maybe more than one person, me, understands what it meant.
Well, in fact, you've also told me that actually you feel that 50% of your work actually is the contribution of the viewer, not necessarily what you've brought.
It's exactly right. I've often said, you know, the painting's not finished until somebody looks at it and identifies with it.
In fact, in my world as a consultant and a coach, I often caution that whenever anyone's giving you advice, that they're actually 50% talking to themselves at the same time.
Exactly right.
And so that would be the same from a reflective standpoint in the beauty of art.
That's right. And that's, you know, we're all connected that way. And you're not alone. No artist does it all by himself. He needs those people out there.
Your sources of inspiration then, do you carry that committee in your head, or is this things that strike you at different waves and different times?
The first painter that really got me into this narrative point of view for a painting and to have some kind of fun attached to it was Paul Klee. When I was a kid, he was the first painter I saw of any note. I didn't even know who he was. But I saw it, and all of that struck me at the time. That here's and now I realize what it was, is he's a narrative painter. And life isn't always glum. I mean, there's a certain joy to it all. And, of course, there is joy, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, that's lovely. Yeah. Well, Alan, this transition you've been through and this joy in this painting, the special messages that you think you're walking away with from this right now on a deep personal level for you?
I don't know if there's any one thing. It seems to be an ongoing revelation or story that just keeps going, and nothing special except sometimes I feel like it, today validates yesterday, and so it builds like a building block.
The other thing is our show that we did back in June of 2009, you entitled that every Friday feels like yesterday was Monday.
Oh, that's because it goes by so fast I can hardly keep a hold of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And isn't that the greatest way to live, though, to enjoy that moment?
And not being bored. I haven't been bored stiff since I was probably, I don't even remember when I was ever bored stiff.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, this has been Dr. Zara Larson, my first of four segments here on a fabulous show at the Southern Arizona Horse Expo. Alan Martin, accomplished artist, thanks again for joining us here today, and we'll catch you around the exhibit.
Thank you.
President Obama is calling on two predecessors to assist in the relief effort for Haiti. George W. Bush and Bill Clinton will lead a special fundraising drive.
Presidents Bush and Clinton will help the American people to do their part, because responding to a disaster must be the work of all of us. Indeed, those wrenching scenes of devastation remind us not only of our common humanity, but also of our common responsibilities.
Former presidents have been teaming up to help with long-term projects like this since the 1970s. In Haiti, it is tough getting aid to survivors. Now the U.S. military has taken control of the airport in Port-au-Prince to help get things moving. ABC's Martha Raddatz is there.
Boots on the ground, meaning the Army here, I think you'll see about 3,000, 3,500, a brigade from the 82nd Airborne. They're basically doing security in the airport right now to keep, I saw people trying to get into the airport yesterday, keeping people out, but they'll also help with security and getting the food distributed.
With continuing coverage, earthquake in Haiti, I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Are you enjoying a healthy, balanced lifestyle? Hi, I'm Holly Baker, publisher of Natural Awakenings magazine. We offer readers balanced, cutting-edge information on natural health, nutrition, fitness, personal development, and green living. Watch for our free monthly publication at select points across Tucson. To advertise, please call 520-760